Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. Thank you for joining us today. When you get a chance, please check us out at consumerguide.com. That's consumerguide.com. New car reviews, Best Buy picks, and of course the blog where I do fun stuff. Jill, I wrote about the 1979 or was it 1980 Dodge Colt that came with Mitsubishi's twin stick.
Okay.
It's literally a four-speed manual with a stick shift that allows you to change the ratios, giving you what is effectively an eight-speed manual.
Okay.
It is the silliest, dumbest, craziest thing in the world, but apparently it worked really well. But I wrote about that.
Okay.
It's crazy.
Okay.
So I also talked about that this week on the Nick DiGilio, Nick D podcast that drops tomorrow. Listen to our podcast first, and then listen to Nick's.
Okay.
Get them both in,
but listen to ours first.
Now, when I'm on his show, I say listen to Nick's show first, mm-hmm. and then listen to ours.
Got it. Well, you're kind of supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Nick's show is good. People should listen to that, too. How you doing? That voice is Jill Simonello.
Hello.
Contributing editor at ConsumerGuide.com, North American Car of the Year juror, and a hustling freelancer.
Hustling.
I wrote down hustling.
Hustling.
And then I remembered to look at my notes.
Yes.
So there you go.
Hustling.
We had our best month last month.
I like to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad, because we've been doing this for 5 years now. We're coming up on our 300th episode, and I'm just glad it's still growing.
Yes.
So thank you, new listeners. Thank you, loyal listeners. It means a lot. Drop us a line. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. We'd love to hear from you. And I just did a little checking after someone yelled at us about that whole Sweden thing.
Okay.
Last week's show, people from Melbourne, Australia, Seoul, Korea, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Garbia, never heard of it, Garbia, Egypt.
Okay.
Rabat, Morocco, and Bengaluru, India.
Bengaluru.
So hello.
Hello.
Foreign nations.
Yes.
That's
we appreciate
cool.
you.
Yeah. We appreciate the fact that you know English because we don't know your language.
No. I hablo un poco de español, and that is with my very gringo accent.
So that was very gringo.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of stuff to get to today, but I just want to confess something I didn't expect.
Okay.
The Alfa Romeo Tonale, which I've accused of not being a very real
Alfa Romeo.
Yeah. And I hated the plug-in drivetrain.
Right.
The plug-in hybrid drivetrain. I had the gas version last week.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Well, you know,
it's really good, and it's strangely affordable.
You and I have both agreed that the gas version of that powertrain is really good.
It's pretty good.
We've seen it in the Dodge
Hornet.
Yes, I keep wanting to call it the Stinger, but the Hornet.
Here's the thing about that: the Hornet is kind of not exactly a discount version of this.
Yeah.
But the Alfa gets a much nicer interior.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think it gets upgrade brakes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not identical mechanically, but
right.
they are similar, and they're based on the same architecture, same relatively humble architecture.
Mm-hmm.
But often engineers did what they needed to with that. So we'll talk about that vehicle later. We have talked about at length, I think, the demise of the Tesla Model S and Model X.
Yes.
They've stopped exporting them to Europe.
Okay.
So they quit China, they quit Europe, they're going to be quitting here soon.
Yeah.
You're not going to keep a line open for those two things. So that's a bit of news. Anyway, you're going to appreciate this topic.
I like topics that I appreciate.
No, it starts bad.
Oh, then I don't like that.
But the big, beautiful bill recently passed by Congress and
yes.
signed by the president includes, unfortunately, making toothless the EPA laws, the EPA CAFE standard laws, which means they're no longer enforceable.
Yes.
Now, it seems unlikely to me that manufacturers are going to back away from their fuel economy gains over the years, but they may take some stuff away. And there's been a lot, maybe you saw this, a lot of stories written last week about the potential for stop-start systems to go away.
Oh, my God. You know what? I hope they go away. Those, to me, are the most useless things. And people swear up and down it saves them fuel. And I will say on Subaru vehicles,
I've seen significant numbers for the fuel saving.
They actually tell you how much gallons of fuel you're saving. There's actually a little screen that says, but I just, bleh.
Yeah. Nick Capa, who's a Stellantis representative, when he was with Ram, was talking about how much it saves in big trucks. And it was a considerable amount of fuel. And I've seen numbers that say fuel economy improves by 3 to 5%.
Mm.
which is not dismissible.
Yeah.
And you get the, if you're a manufacturer, you get the EPA credit. But here's the thing about this. This stuff is proven technology. It doesn't take that much to bake it into a car system. It may actually disappear for a little while. Or what we're not going to see is the system being added to vehicles that don't have it yet.
Yeah.
It's going to stick around on hybrids because it's so easy to do on hybrids.
Well, but in a hybrid, it's not the same thing because you can move the vehicle under electric propulsion when you lift your foot off of the gas. But in this stop-start engine situation, as soon as you lift your foot off the brake, like the engine's like, it's got to like chunk back on.
There was, later systems were much better, but you may remember back in the aughts when Chevrolet came out with a fake hybrid Silverado.
Yep, I remember that.
And it really wasn't a hybrid. It simply had a stock star system.
It was a mild hybrid with
And it had an electrical outlet in the tailgate or in the bed area, and they were calling that a hybrid. This was really early stop start, and the system worked by engaging the engine not when you lift it off of the brake pedal, but after it felt your foot on the gas pedal.
Stuttering and stalling.
Yeah, so you had no creep while your foot was moving off the brake, no idle creep at all. And then it had to start while you were trying to put your foot through the throttle. It was terrible. And then additionally, for no good reason, this was the Chevy 5.3, one of the smoothest engines on the planet. Its stop-start was terrible.
Yeah.
And it was clunky and horrible. That noise you just made, it was like that. but it's gotten so much better then. And actually, we're going to be talking to the folks at Subaru in a little bit. And the stop-start in the new Forester hybrid?
But again, silky. I would not say that is a stop-start system. That is a hybrid system. It's a full hybrid. So when you take your foot off the brake, you can move under electric-only propulsion. Whereas with the stop-start, you have to have the engine on for the vehicle to move.
Yes.
So I don't think that's a stop-start system in a hybrid.
Well, they call it a stop-start system. I mean, if you want to make the distinction, you can. But it is effectively a stop-start system. Mm-hmm. And it is part of the reason that hybrids save fuel, actually, is that the engine is off.
Well, the engine is off, but it's because it's able to operate with electric motivation.
But, yes, new
Sorry.
Topic.
A hill I will stand on.
Hey, my phone is ringing.
It doesn't say spam likely this time.
Good news for people who like to buy their Triscuits in lots of 24.
Triscuits, as in the cracker?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Ineos Grenadier, now available through the Costco car purchasing system.
Got it.
That's the weirdest piece of news in the world.
That you can buy Ineos through Costco.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's interesting because I feel like they only had a limited amount of dealerships throughout the United States. So does this mean like nationwide now you can purchase it from any Costco?
I don't know that because I don't know if you need to have a distributor nearby to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the licensing works. I just have that single fact. But it's worth looking into.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how that works because they do have very limited distribution. They do have a store in Chicago, I think.
They do. It's in
That's all I care about.
Shore.
Do they have one here? Then we're
They do.
Good.
They do. It's on the North Shore. I think we are the only Midwest location, perhaps.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
A big city in the Midwest here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You.
Yes.
You spent some time driving the Cadillac Escalade IQ.
Yes.
There's a lot here to explain, and why don't you start by explaining the name?
Is there an explanation for it?
No.
So Cadillac has started going into this naming nomenclature thing with the IQ at the end. So you have the Lyric with a, you know, IQ at the end, the Celestiq with the IQ at the end. So rather than IC. And so because you couldn't necessarily say Escaletic.
I have a problem. I wanted to go eek, not ick. So Vistique, Optique,
I think it's
Lyric.
I think it's
Lyric sounds terrible.
I know, and I think Celestiq. It's ick.
But
Sorry.
it is ick.
We don't mean it as it sounds. But yeah, so it's Cadillac IQ to stick with the naming structure that they are going with. And this is the electric version of the Cadillac Escalade gasoline version. And it is just as big, just as in your face. And it is, if you were looking for a three-row electric SUV, I would say it is something to see, but it is incredibly expensive.
Cadillac exists right now largely because there is an Escalade.
Yes.
It has a bunch of models, but it's the Escalade that does the volume and does the profit.
Yeah.
It makes so much money off of these. I've seen numbers of $15,000 per unit profit.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were going to go EV, they couldn't just shag The Escalade. It needed to be there in some form. So, yeah, they've got the Monster EV version of this vehicle, and I suspect it'll sell reasonably well, if not very well.
Well, and this is the short wheelbase version. I believe they are coming with the IQL coming soon, which is going to be even bigger.
Did you guys talk about that? Were you at an event?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I have some questions about the L.
Yeah, no, I had it as a press loan from Cadillac through our fleet managers here in Chicago.
So here's the deal. So you can't answer my question, but I can pose it.
You can pose it.
I can pose it, and we can theorize. Mm-hmm. The standard Escalade, 212 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
The Escalade ESV, the long wheelbase version, 227 inches. These are huge.
Mm-hmm.
This is where things get interesting. The Escalade IQ, 224 inches, almost as long as the long wheelbase gasoline-powered version.
Mm-hmm.
But the IQL, just 228 inches. It's only 4 inches longer.
Yeah.
I kind of don't know why they bothered. And it shares a wheelbase with the shorter Cadillac. So I'm kind of confused by why they bothered.
I'm guessing it's for cargo space. And I think all of that is going to go in the cargo area because the third row is really nice. The second row is really nice. I feel like you have plenty of leg room all around. And so the only way I can fathom that you would have this even, you know, 4 inch longer vehicle is that you would put that into the cargo area.
Yeah. Now, you drove the short version?
I did.
But plenty of rear seat space.
Plenty of rear seat space.
Yeah,
well,
so,
for somebody who's 5 feet tall and weighs 95 pounds.
there are some limitations, and we talked about these before, to designing an electric vehicle, and that's you have to squish a bunch of battery between the front and rear axle.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it's a bunch of battery, 205 kilowatt hours of battery.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah, no, this thing is a behemoth all around, and I did not even try and park it in my garage because the idea of scraping or scratching or scuffing a $167,000 vehicle was not on my bingo card for this year. So I parked it on on the street, and I drove it to Indianapolis and parked it at my mom's house.
So you drove it, you put a lot of miles on it.
I did.
Presume that, what is the stated range here, 450 miles?
I think it's like 460 miles.
Dang. And did it live up to that?
100% lived
good.
Up to it.
Okay,
and so here's the beautiful thing about having such a large battery.
You should be able to go there and come back, although that's not safe. I mean,
no,
I'm sure you charged
no.
it someplace.
And like I got it with 80% battery life, and I thought, should I go and charge it before I leave? And I'm like, no, I'm not gonna. And so I drove all the way there, still had 100 miles of battery left, range left on the vehicle. When I got to Indianapolis, we stayed at a Courtyard Marriott that had a free charging. So I plugged
like
in
level two.
Level two plugged into the level two. I think I had like maybe 30 or 40% of the battery when I plugged it in, and overnight it only went up to 70%.
Here's the thing about this, and people are going to wildly misinterpret this. This battery is massive.
It is massive.
So you can't charge this 100% overnight at home.
No.
But you do pick up considerable mileage.
Yeah.
You pick up range. Total range is 460 miles. Huge battery, but you are picking up meaningful range overnight at home. You're just not going to charge it all the way because it's a big battery. It's a bigger bucket.
It is a big battery. And so I took it to an Electrify America station before we headed out of town because I was going to be turning it in the next day and just wanted to make sure I had enough range for them to get it back to their fleet management building. And so I think we went to Electrify America, and I think I was there for 15 minutes and put like an extra 15% range on there. I got it up to like 85%.
Okay.
And drove home, had 150 miles on it to turn it back in.
This thing is supposed to charge really quickly. I don't know if I have the numbers here, but was this a super, or what do they call it? Electrify America calls it ultra fast.
Yeah, it's 350 kilowatt, kilowatt hours of, charge capability. And I feel like, I don't think the Escalade IQ goes all the way up to
that high.
250 maybe.
Something I have it in my notes and I can't find them, but that's okay. It's like that fast. Oh, here it is. 254.
Okay, yeah. And I think I was getting about 200.
Oh, well, that's fast.
So, and it did fairly well. And
I mean, that's fast enough that you should be able to half charge that battery just doing fast math in half an hour.
Like I said, 15 minutes and I added 15% of range. So it was like a minute. But I was incredibly impressed with the range. The Google built-in system, if you use the native navigation and you plug in your destination, it will give you a battery life estimate. So like it'll say you will arrive at 30%. And that was...
Do you leave that like on the screen?
Yeah.
While you're driving?
Yeah, I do. I mean, or unless I'm switching over to, well... I was going to say Apple CarPlay, but can't do that here. So, I left it on the screen, and it was very, very accurate.
Like other General Motors vehicles, including the very hot-selling Equinox EV, no Apple CarPlay in General Motors electric vehicles.
So here's the thing.
Or anymore.
I have recently discovered, or at least heard through the grapevine, that the Cadillac Lyriq still has Apple CarPlay.
Well, that was the first EV.
Yeah. But,
so they haven't done a significant enough of update of it.
But even the 2026 version still has, and they just did a V series, still has Apple CarPlay.
And has it been freshened since it was launched?
I don't think that matters because it's just an over-the-air update to withdraw the Apple CarPlay.
No, but they might update the head unit and just start going with... That would be the oldest.
It is. But the Silverado EV, the original models coming out of that had Apple CarPlay. And then...
I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah, then the next model year, when they started rolling it out across for additional trims, they deleted Apple CarPlay.
So it's like, interesting. Yeah. And if there's a reason for that isn't technical, I'd like to know it. Like some sort of marketing reason.
But I just thought that was interesting because I was talking about the Cadillac Lyriq on TikTok and that it didn't have Apple CarPlay. And I was bemoaning that GM EVs don't have Apple CarPlay.
As you do.
As I do. And one of my followers was like, no, I just bought a 2026 Lyriq and it has Apple CarPlay. And I was like, I need video of that because I was not aware that that was the case.
Yeah, I played with CarPlay over the weekend because I told you I would. In the Tenali, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Well, in the Tenali, I would say in the Alfa Romeo vehicles, Apple CarPlay is not good.
Well, it's a tiny screen.
Yeah, it's a tiny screen. That's a problem. But
the other issue is I don't exploit CarPlay the way you do.
Yeah.
I don't do voice to text.
No.
And I don't listen to text messages. All I do is play Ray Bryant really loudly.
Play your very bad music.
Wow.
So here's the thing. If you are somebody who's in your car and you're driving and you don't use your phone in the car as a phone, you will have no problems not having Apple CarPlay. But if you do voice to text, if you answer phone calls, if you're listening to voicemails, or if you want to listen to your Apple podcasts or Apple music, then it's a problem. But if you don't use your phone in the car, not a problem.
We should talk real quick about the Escalade experience. Now, the gasoline-powered Escalade, to me, is one of the quietest, smoothest riding, most relaxing highway cruisers with a bunch of power, too. Mm-hmm. Does the EV live up to this?
It definitely does. Okay. It is fast. It is quiet. It is smooth. We did the 200 miles to Indianapolis and back, and no fatigue, no muscle aches, whatever. When you get out of the vehicle, it's sumptuous and comfortable. The one thing I will say is I think that, and I'm working on writing a review for greencars.com right now on this vehicle, and I'm trying to figure out how to say this in the review, but the problem I found with the technology is that it is just a little bit over the top. Like, you can open your doors with the screen. You can, you have to turn your headlights on and off with the screen. You have to go through the screen for your air vents and your HVAC controls. And then you have a second screen that does your map and your navigation. And it was just like, when I was trying to figure out, how to open or close the doors with the screen, I was like, where's the screen? And you can open and close your doors just using the door handle, but it's like a power door, and so it feels awkward when you are doing that. And so
it is weird that these are now the tenets of luxury.
I know.
And if you buy this vehicle, if you are fortunate enough to be in a position to buy this vehicle and then enjoy it, absolutely make sure that your dealer walks you through all this crap and sets you up with it in advance so you don't have to do it later.
Yes, because I mean, I spent probably a solid hour. Like, I logged into my Google account and
I'm not this patient.
I did sync my phone. And so I logged into my Waze account and my Gmail and all of that stuff via the car so that I could have access to my Google and my maps and my things. And it's just, it's a lot. And I could never get the voice to text to work well through the car saying, "Hey, Google." You know, I have this problem where I say, "Hey, Google, message my husband." And my husband's first name is John. And it wanted to text every other John in my phone book except for my husband.
Just do a broadcast to all Johns.
Yeah. Well, and so it was funny. I was having dinner with one of the Johns that wanted to text message over, like, last week. And I was like, by the way, if you ever get a random text message from me saying, you know, don't forget to bring home dinner, it's because Google just thought you were my husband.
Just for the record, I did not crack a joke about how many Johns you have.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You laughed, though.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you giggled. It was kind of a high school giggle.
I'm adolescent that way.
You are.
Escalade IQ goes on sale when?
On sale now.
Prices?
I had the Luxury 2 version, and I want to say the base for that was around $140, but this was optioned out very well, and my as-tested price was $167,000.
Bit of a commitment.
Yeah, so ergo, did not want to try and shove it in my small garage.
No, but it's also more money, considerably more money than a gasoline-powered.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now we know.
Yeah. It was all the bougie, luxury, tech-forward things you would think it is, and it is a blast to drive. It does drive a little bit big, but it is a joy.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Bill Stokes, car line planning manager at Subaru.
Yes.
Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. And in a moment, we talk a little Subaru.
We do.
But help me out here.
You would like to talk about the fact that you are on Twitter and Blue Sky.
Twitter, X, and Blue Sky. Yeah, I'm Car Guy Tom. I talk about the news a little bit. I try not to get too controversial there, and I don't want to get into the political stuff. But I do post my Car Spotter picks.
Yes.
And there was some good stuff Saturday. I do the Saturday collection now.
Okay, it's officially called the Saturday collection?
Yeah, every Saturday I post 4 pictures of crazy stuff I saw while test driving a vehicle. Saturday's my big day. I go out, I drive the vehicle. I have fun with the vehicle, listen to the sound system. That's when I check everything out.
Got it, including Apple CarPlay.
And then I have to wash it, and I photograph it on Sunday.
Got it.
Yeah, I don't play with Apple CarPlay.
You did last weekend, you said.
So you and I recently drove the 2025 Subaru Forester Hybrid. And if I'm not wrong, that's the first ever Forester Hybrid. It's the first ever non-Crosstrek Subaru Hybrid, I believe. But here's the thing. We came away from that really impressed.
Correct.
Like, it's one of the two best vehicles I've driven this year.
Yeah, I think I could agree with that.
Yeah. So on the phone with us is Bill Stokes. He's the car line planning manager at Subaru. Bill, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Great to be on the podcast with you guys.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks for making time. Tell us a little bit about what you do at Subaru.
So as you said, Tom, my title is car line planning manager, and specifically I'm the car line planner for Forester, WRX, and BRZ. So there are other folks who are in charge of the other car lines, but basically I'm here to kind of work with our Japanese colleagues on the engineering side and the development side to understand what the U.S. market needs and what our customers are asking for, how we should equip our cars and things like that.
All right, you can clear something up for us. This has nothing to do with the Forester, but we've both driven the WRX recently.
Mm-hmm.
What happened when it went from TR to TS? Or did I get that backwards again?
No, that's a great question. the TS, so the TS actually was developed with input from STI division within Subaru. That's our in-house sort of performance tuning arm and racing arm.
Uh-huh.
And particularly the suspension development on that car was done by the STI division. Whereas the TR, we kind of just, we put together kind of a enthusiast special for 1 year because we knew the TS was coming, but the development wasn't done on it yet. But we had the brakes, we had the wheels, we had the tire spec. And so we put that together with the moonroof delete, the Recaro seats that were previously only on the WRX GT. And we kind of made a half step to the TS the first year before, or the last year before the TS was going to come out. So that was the idea.
That explains everything. Thank you. And I have only driven the TR, not the TS. So I need to drive the TS because the TR was a blast.
Yeah, and I've driven the TS and love the fact that it's manual transmission only.
All right, yeah.
That's so thank
cool
you for
too.
That.
And that's a good shifter.
Yeah.
All right, Bill, thank you for clearing that up. I feel better now. I will sleep better.
I'm like,
okay, good. Glad to hear.
Now on to the topic of the day.
Yeah, we should talk a little Forester. As I mentioned before, the Forester is now finally available with a hybrid. And just my completely unbiased opinion, it's one of the nicest hybrids I've ever driven. So congratulations. But tell us a little bit about that vehicle and why now.
First of all, I'm glad to hear that you both enjoyed it so much. I'm very
so
happy
good.
To hear that, obviously.
So good.
And there's years of working on a project like this before the car actually, you know, gets out there and people can drive it, and you're always, you know, crossing your fingers that people are going to like it. So it's good to hear. But the deal with the Forester hybrid, we know the market is shifting heavily in the direction of electrified solutions, whether it's full EV or whether it's plug-in hybrid or whether it's conventional hybrid, like what Forester hybrid is. And Forester is a really big volume car line for us. It's one of our biggest sellers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of families buy it, a lot of people that are like thinking about budget, thinking about fuel economy. And so, well, we've done, as you mentioned, we've done hybrid Crosstrek in the past. They've always been kind of limited production, limited volume, not a lot of configurations available, so not a lot of choice.
Right.
And with Forester, we wanted to say, okay, let's make a Forester hybrid that delivers on better fuel economy, and also we can equip it on multiple trim levels. We can build more of them, and we can, you know, kind of make this a regular offering in the lineup that's available to a lot of people.
Well, you did that. Real quick question about something technical here, and I think you guys made a really interesting choice. You guys shared some technology with Toyota, and if you were going to share hybrid technology with anybody, Toyota's the company, right? They know how to do hybrid. But one of the interesting things you did is you guys made a decision to go with your traditional symmetrical all-wheel drive system instead of a motor-powered rear drive setup. Talk about that decision, because it did have a small impact on fuel economy.
Yeah, that was one of the most important decisions for us, because obviously there were a couple extra MPG potentially available if we went with that kind of setup that Toyota uses and that Mazda adopted as well for the CX-50 when they took Toyota's hybrid tech for that. But we're kind of known for our all-wheel drive system and for the performance of our all-wheel drive system. So for us, it was a decision, a trade-off to make between the all-wheel drive capability and the system that people are used to and expect from Subaru, versus getting that extra MPG. So we made the decision that we needed to integrate the hybrid system into our existing all-wheel drive system in such a way that the performance was comparable to what a customer would expect from a Subaru. And that, first of all, it's, as I said, what our customers expect, but it also means that we can have a slightly different offering from what Toyota is delivering. We can say, okay, it uses this really good hybrid technology that we're sharing with Toyota, but, you know, if instead of having chocolate, you can have peanut butter. You know, you've got a slightly different flavor there for the customer that needs and wants it. So that was the reason for making that decision the way we did it.
Can you talk at all about the drivetrain? One of the interesting things is if you go hybrid, you pick up a little horsepower. Obviously, you pick up a lot of fuel economy. But one of the other things you pick up unbelievably is smoothness. I cannot believe how refined this drivetrain is.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I was most impressed with when I first drove the engineering prototypes, when we first had the opportunity to go to Japan and test drive them for the first time, because the auto stop-start function of the system is so much smoother than most of what I've experienced from either other cars in our lineup or from other manufacturers' vehicles. And that sort of seamless integration of the engine on-off function and just the way the hybrid system, like, sort of phases in and phases out with the gas engine. There's more sound deadening in the Forester hybrid, and I think that tamps down some of the awareness of what the two different systems are doing with one another. And so that when I drive it, and I've driven, you know, different trim levels, and I've spent a lot of time driving Forester hybrids, and you just sort of lose track of what the hybrid system is doing in the background, and so it just feels very intuitive and very easy to use.
That, I think, is the key sign of an excellent hybrid system, is when you're not thinking about or aware when it's running, that it is a hybrid system.
Yeah.
And that's not true in a lot of cases. It's getting better. A lot of manufacturers are doing it better, but Toyota obviously does it very well. And now you guys have this system, and I just forgot it was a hybrid, frankly. I just didn't think about it. And I think that that is a compliment to you guys. Can you tell us about availability, what trim levels are available with the hybrid, and what we're talking about in terms of price points?
Well, sure. So we've basically selected the most or the most popular trims within the lineup, and we've contented the car in a very simple way. Normally with our internal combustion non-hybrid models of the Forester, there's like at each of the main points, the base, premium, sport, limited, and touring, there's usually a standard model, and then there's an option package that's available on top of it.
Okay.
And that's at least true of premium, sport, and limited. The other two are just one spec. But what we've done with the hybrid is we've included the option package content as standard instead of having like the entry model and the optional model, because most of our customers go for the option package. And so if you look at the pricing, if you look at the entry price of a Forester Premium, the internal combustion non-hybrid version, and then you look at the Forester hybrid price, you'll see a gap that looks bigger than what the actual apples-to-apples price would be.
Okay.
Because the option package content that's, again, optional on the non-hybrid version is standard on the hybrid. So really the gap is usually less than $2,000 depending on trim level.
Okay, because visually here there's a pretty big gap. The conventional gasoline-powered Forester starts around $32,000, and then the least expensive hybrid's about $38,000, but you're actually going up a trim level and then adding an option package.
Exactly right. So if you were to opt for the normal premium model, the non-hybrid version, there's an option package on top of that, which is a blind spot detection and power rear gate package, and that stuff is standard on the hybrid. So you kind of package that in mentally when you think about what's included in the option or is included in the Forester hybrid. And then we've done the same thing with the Forester Sport hybrid and the Forester Limited hybrid. Each of those non-hybrid models has an option package. In this case, it's just rolled in with the hybrid version because that's the more popular configuration.
I have to say, one of the things that I was most impressed by with the hybrid, I did a range test road trip in this. I'm preparing the video for YouTube now, but I was really impressed that I was actually able to get the fuel economy that the EPA and Subaru recommends. And I'll tell you, like, I don't usually have that happen. A lot of times I will drive a hybrid and I'll get 10 mpg less than what the EPA estimates. So I was just wondering if you had any thoughts or background information on how you guys were able to stay accurate where or close to what the EPA estimation is, whereas a lot of times, you know, maybe you have differences in other manufacturers. And I drive every vehicle the same, which tends to be a little bit more aggressive. So that makes it even more impressive that I managed to stay on the EPA
estimates.
I've heard
it described as reckless.
Not reckless, just aggressive.
Well, that's a great question. I think, everybody does the same EPA test. Mm-hmm. So I think it may have something to do with how maybe throttles are tuned or something like that in terms of, you know, delivering real-world fuel economy as opposed to delivering test fuel economy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe other manufacturers are tuning their cars in such a way that if you give it a little more throttle than average, there's a sharper response and you use more fuel. I'm not exactly sure, but my experience has been the same as yours, Jill, that when I've driven the Forester Hybrid, I've gotten basically bang on the label fuel economy. I've gotten 34, 35,
cool.
Occasionally 36 most of the time when I've driven it, whether it's highway or whether it's city, which the state of fuel economy is basically 35 across the board, or I think 34 highway or something like that. So it's pretty consistent no matter how you drive.
Yeah, I mean, because I found I was getting up to, I want to say 35 miles per gallon going 75 miles per hour. And I know most of these tests are done in a vacuum, like at 55 miles an hour. And so that to me was really impressive. And to be clear, the speed limits were 70 to 75 miles per hour. So I wasn't going 20 miles over the speed limit.
Yeah, sure.
But I'm like, let's be clear. And then once I got back into Chicago, or, you know, when I was inside the inner circle for Indianapolis, and I was driving lower speeds, I found that I was even going up to like 38 or 39 miles per gallon. So I have to say that was the thing that impressed me the most, was I was actually able to get the fuel economy that was on the sticker sheet.
That's really good news. I do have to give that one caveat, though. If you do the proper Subaru driver test and you drive it with two kayaks on the roof,
oh yes,
you may see a decrease in fuel economy, which I've seen with my Outback Wilderness when I I drove it up to the Finger Lakes from where I live in Pennsylvania a couple of weeks ago, and you know it definitely has a measurable impact on the fuel economy when you put stuff on the roof.
Well, I should tell you that Tom and I have a longstanding joke about the fact that we think every Subaru comes with a kayak on the top, and there was a period of time where every time I saw a Subaru and it did in fact have a kayak or a canoe or something on top, I would take a picture of it and I would send it to Tom because I would just be like, oh, there's another one with the standard installed.
We began to theorize that Subaru knocks $20 off your monthly payment if you keep the kayak on top.
Yes.
Oh, that's a great idea.
There you go. Man,
I should actually talk to the marketing department and see if they want to come up with something like that, because I mean, people are already doing it, which is great, but yeah, what a great way to advertise for our brand and the fact that, you know, our customers actually do this stuff.
And you need to take money off for people who have dogs. Right. Who are like sitting in the back, belted in.
We'd lose a fortune, though. We'd lose so much money because our research says that about half of our customers are dog owners, and a significant portion of that say that they bring their dog places in the car.
The other half own a manatee.
Maybe.
Which they don't strap to the roof.
We do have like 3%. Like 3% of our customers say that they own chickens, which I was shocked by.
What does that mean?
I don't know what those folks are doing, but hey, I guess they're keeping them in the backyard and.
Yeah.
Who knows? But pet owners, definitely.
All right, Bill, I've got a marketing question for you, and you're going to say you don't talk about future product, but I have to ask.
But he's asking anyway.
So far, no Wilderness. Will we see a Wilderness version of the hybrid?
Actually, I've been asked that a few times. I think it was kind of the first time we were asked that question was at Chicago Auto Show, where we announced the hybrid, and we also showed the 26 model year Wilderness for the first time. And people were looking at both of them on the auto show stand and were saying, why don't you put them together? And it's definitely something that we're considering, and customers have started to ask about that. So it's something that we're looking into. Of course, I cannot confirm nor deny whether we will do it or not, but we've definitely had some customers asking.
Gotcha.
So it's not off the table.
All right. Bill, we run out of time here, but is there anything we missed that you want to tell us about the Forester Hybrid?
No, I don't think so. Thanks for testing it, and I did listen to your episode, and I really enjoyed hearing you back and forth. One thing I did appreciate, the autumn green metallic mention.
Yes.
Thanks for the shout on that one. That is my wife's favorite color. She has a 25 model year Forester Limited in autumn green.
Awesome. Well, so before we sign off, I do have to get under Tom's skin just a little bit, and I have to ask you, what have you run any races lately, or what's your running schedule look like?
I'm waiting to thank you for getting on the real topic there, Jim.
Right?
Thank you so much.
I'm going to step out for a little while.
As long as we don't start talking about shoes.
Right.
I'm waiting to see if I've gotten into the London Marathon for next year. So that would be my sixth of the World Marathon majors if I can do it. And that would be the full set. So just waiting to get London, and once I do, I'll maybe take a little while off from running distance races.
Well, good luck with that. That's very
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. So a little background. Bill and I talk running talk offline.
I just learned that.
So I had to slide that in because I know last week Brendan talked about that there was no running talk and he was very sad about that. So.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Well, we got some.
Got to get it in there.
It's like, good luck with
talk about running.
That was like a month's
thank
worth.
Thank you so much. We'll see.
All right. Bill, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, both of you. I really, really appreciate the opportunity.
All right. That was Bill Stokes. He's the car line planning manager at Subaru. We were talking about the Forester Hybrid. We're going to take a break. When we come back,
quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Hi, it's Brendan from Sons of Speed. You've heard me and my colleague Paul on the Car Stuff podcast whenever Jill's out of town. But now you can hear us every week on the We Are Motor Driven podcast, along with Jennifer from Auto Exotica and Harvey from Rides and Drives. We talk about everything from sports cars to trucks to EVs and our favorite, speed. So join us each week by searching We Are Motor Driven wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Welcome. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, episode 286, for what that's worth. Does that have any feng shui value?
I don't think that it does. That's
no.
An even number. I feel like you need odd to
Do you?
Have.
If you add them all together, you get 16, which doesn't feel special
still
either.
Still even.
All right. Real quick, you're a social media gadfly, bug, firefly.
Yeah, so I've really been trying to do a big push on social media lately, and I've been trying to fill out my YouTube channel. So I would love it if you guys would all go to my YouTube channel. You can find me at Jill Ciminiello, J-I-L-L-C-I-M-I-N-I-L-L-O.
Dang.
Dang. And I use the hashtag.
I have never spelled that correctly.
No. Salmonella
It's wrong on your birth certificate.
Cinderella. It's not wrong on my birth certificate. It's probably the only place it's right. But yeah, so if you could go there and give me a subscribe, I would really appreciate it. And I use the hashtag Car du Jour there, as well as on all of my other social media. I do daily posts to TikTok and YouTube, and near daily posts to Instagram. I have a funny Instagram post where I tried to do the Nicki Minaj challenge, balancing on one leg and a squat, and it did not end well for me. So,
I tried that.
Yeah? How did that go for you?
Paramedics.
Paramedics, yeah. So, but I try to be entertaining and funny, and I interact with people if you interact with me. So I would love a follow on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky, what is it, Twitter, X.
Foursquare.
All the things,
Yelp.
Yes. Yeah, I am on Yelp.
I am. Just it got old.
Okay.
People should also follow the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast on Facebook.
Yes.
We need more followers there. Great way to find out about, I'm going to do this more and talk about what's coming up. Because we don't do that. We just talk about stuff after the fact.
Yeah.
So we can let you know about our guests, like Bill today.
Yeah. You know what? At the beginning of the month, we should do a schedule of what our upcoming guests are, because we usually have that.
All right. That would be your job.
Oh, great. Thanks.
piece of news here. Our friend Mitch Frumkin, and we've mentioned Mitch before, but he's a member of the Midwest Automotive Media Association. Mm-hmm. He is an automotive historian, a writer, and in fact, he wrote a book called 100 Years of the Chicago Auto Show. He co-wrote that with Jim Matea, whom we've mentioned before. Anyway, one night only, if you're in Chicago, Wednesday, August 13th, where is this?
Next week.
The Geneva Public Library in Geneva, Illinois. If you are near there, free show. Free show. It's a history of the Chicago Auto Show. It is a one-hour presentation that includes some video, it includes some pictures, and Mitch live. So you can talk to Mitch and learn about the Chicago Auto Show. The Chicago Auto Show, kind of a survivor, right? It got through the Depression, it got through the Second World War, and it got through COVID.
Yeah.
And it's still fabulous.
Yes.
So come and check out the show. A lot of stuff about preview cars, about concept cars. And one of my favorite cars, the most important car probably of the last 40 years, the 1999 Lexus 300 RX. Changed the world. Kind of the first luxury crossover.
Yep.
Everything else was an SUV until then.
Yes.
All right. It's quiz time.
Okay. I just want to say I listened to the quiz last week, and I would have gotten 4 out of 5.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. We'll count that. had a conversation with a friend of ours on Blue Sky, Bill Crittenden.
Yes.
He is the creator and manager and publisher of the Crittenden Auto Collection.
Yes.
You can check it out at carsandracingstuff.com. Carsandracingstuff.com. But the Crittenden Collection is cool, but he suggested that I should do a quiz of fake cars, all fake cars. And I've taken it a step further. So, Bill, this is for you.
Thanks, Bill.
I need you to tell me if these Chinese cars are real or fake.
Oh, great.
So I've got 5 cars here for you.
Okay.
I will tell you that the brands are all real.
Okay.
So what's fake here potentially is the model.
Okay.
And I apologize for my pronunciation.
Your made-up pronunciation for your made-up models?
Yes.
Got it.
All right, 5 questions plus a bonus question. Bonus question always related to the topic of the day.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to anticipate that I will get none of these because I'm not.
You might. You might get some of these.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Number one, just tell me if this is a real model or not. The Wuling Hongguang Mini. Wuling Hongguang Mini.
I will say yes.
It is real.
Hmm.
It's actually one of the most popular General Motors product. It is sold through General Motors joint venture with SAIC in China. It is a tiny little electric car that sells for about $5,000.
Let me guess, it's Mini.
It's very many.
Okay.
You've got one.
Oh, wow. Okay. Unexpected.
The BYD song. BYD song.
S-O-N-G.
S-O-N-G. Like our song. Like a love song. A sad song.
I know they have the shark, and I've looked up BYD vehicles, but I don't remember if song is one of them or not.
This was a company that 20 years ago Warren Buffett saw coming. Like, he made a lot of money off of this.
Okay.
He knew about this. And BYD's huge now.
Well, and you know, do you know what BYD stands for?
Beyond Your Dreams?
Build your dreams. Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to say no.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah,
okay.
That one's really, I'm going to have to, I thought you were going to go all the way and I wouldn't have to write anything down. So you got one here. I'm going to put an N next to this question.
Okay.
So
no.
You can see it. N. No, you didn't get
no.
that.
No.
All right.
Got it.
The BYD Golden Leopard.
I'm going to say no.
No.
I'm like, that seems a little bit much.
No. Why does that seem like it's on the wrong line? Okay. That would be on me. Oh, wait. So you got that one right.
Yes.
All right. I'm sorry. I put no, but the answer was no. You got the answer right.
Yes.
You have 2 points.
I've got 2 points, and all I need are three to win.
Three for a win.
Yes.
And I'm pronouncing this as I've heard it pronounced in podcasts. The Xiaomi SU7.
I'm going to say yes.
That's real, and it's a big deal. It's crushing Tesla sales over in China. It's a big deal. It's a luxury. I guess the application is fantastic. This is a very well-reviewed vehicle, and it comes in for about the price of a Model Y, though it is much more vehicle.
I feel like, and I could be completely wrong about this, but I feel like I've seen Forrest Jones, who is a big TikToker, do a review on this.
Maybe. Yeah. This is a very important vehicle.
Yeah.
So the Xiaomi SU7, if they were going to import something to the States, it might be something like that. So Xiaomi is kind of an up-and-coming name. I'm not that familiar with it.
Mm-mm.
All right, you've already won.
Yay!
The Great Wall Joy.
I remember Great Wall had a...
That'd be a good candy bar.
The Great Wall Joy. Kind of like the Almond Joy. I remember the Great Wall had a display space at one of the auto shows.
Yeah.
I feel like it was at Detroit 1 year.
Great Wall keeps trying. I don't know if they're doing well.
Yeah.
That might be one of the big government-funded companies.
Could be. Joy. I mean, it seems like it should be a name. Great Wall. I'm gonna say yes.
No, that one's fake. But you got your three. No.
Well, it did better than I thought I would, because I thought I would have gotten a big old goose egg.
Would the Great Wall Weeping Panda be a good name for a car?
No.
Okay. All right. You're a big fan of automotive history.
Totes.
One of the interesting things about Edsel, 1958, Edsel, it only went 3 model years.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible marketing failure. No matter what anyone tells you, the problem wasn't the car itself. It was marketing, and it was timing and the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an absolute disaster.
Mm.
But one of the interesting things about Edsel is that they had 4 models when they launched.
Okay.
All of them were names that were later used.
Okay.
I'm going to give you 5 model names. You need to tell me which one was not an Edsel.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Citation.
Mm-hmm.
Corsair. Pacer. Ranger. Explorer. One of those was not what's the car? Edsel. Good that I forgot what I was talking about while I was talking about it.
I thought a Citation was a Chevy.
It was.
So how could that be a Ford?
They let the licensing rights slip. Yeah. Citation was launched for 1980. It was one of the General Motors X cars. Huge seller.
Okay, so you said, read them again.
Citation,
mm-hmm.
Corsair,
mm-hmm.
Pacer, Ranger, Explorer. If it matters, Pacer was also used by a different company. That was an AMC.
Because I know Corsair is now used by Lincoln, and obviously Ranger and Explorer are used by Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Whew. I'm going to say Explorer.
You are correct.
Okay.
Yeah, there was no Explorer in the product lineup. Very nicely. I'm signing this for you.
Woo! And it's handwritten even.
Yeah, just because I was lazy this morning. We talked about Bill Crittenden. Hey, Bill, thank you for listening. I'll give this to you. You're eating a donut already. You grabbed the cinnamon.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad we got to this because this was really important. I did a poll on X.
Super important.
Super important. Mm-hmm. And the question was, what would you like to hear more of on the podcast?
Okay.
The options were running, the
yes.
Chrysler Cordoba,
uh-huh.
donuts, and the people of Sweden.
Okay.
I'm just going to read these in order.
Okay.
Running, 0%.
That's because I didn't issue the poll.
Chrysler Cordoba, 33%. Donuts, 22%. And the people of Sweden, 44%.
Well, then. Okay. So we clearly need to do more research on Sweden.
I guess we do. All right. I wrote down all sorts of topics, and we have completely exhausted my topic list. Yeah, that's it. So we need to talk about what you're driving today. Oh, you're not in a car. What are you getting into next?
I'm getting into something that you guys talked about last week while I wasn't here.
That what's that?
Clearly, you guys said you didn't like the Acura ADX.
Oh, I have no opinion yet.
Okay.
Brendan Appel, the Sons of Speed, was here, and he was disappointed in the vehicle. The ADX is beached. I feel like I have to go to confession now. the HR-V is the smallest vehicle in the Honda lineup. It's
yes.
a subcompact crossover. I don't fit in it well, but people generally love it as a Honda.
Right.
But it's coming in a little underpowered, apparently, per Brendan,
mm-hmm.
As an Acura. Have you driven it?
I drove it at the Spring Rally, which is where I think he had his first taste of it. And I would say my first impression was that it was a little underpowered.
Okay.
So I'm going to be very curious to see how it does. Because, like, you know, when you're driving it and you just have 10 minutes, like, it you don't get a sense of how it does in city stop starts and how it cruises on the highway and that kind of stuff. So I will actually be driving to Indianapolis next weekend. So
in that vehicle?
In that vehicle.
Okay, well,
so
that will be telling.
I will have a very good opportunity not only to see how the powertrain does, but also the seats. Like, my biggest complaint with the Honda HR-V is seat comfort.
Oh.
Seats are miserable. So I'll be curious to see how that works. But, I mean, I like the way it looks. I thought it was well done in terms of interior appointments and design and things like that. So, but, yeah, I get that tomorrow. I had swapped out of the vehicle you're in, the Ford Bronco Strop, a week and a bit ago. I turned it in at the airport.
Do you know
last
if that's
Monday.
How it's pronounced?
I think it's Strop.
Okay. For some reason, I thought it was Stroppy.
I think it's Strop.
Okay.
I could be completely wrong. If anybody out there knows, please get
for the
in touch
record,
with us.
It is named after a driver engineer who helped Ford win a number of off-road rally victories in the early 70s.
Yes.
And so it's this heritage-looking thing, and it's crazy, and it's white, and it's orange, and I love it.
And it's amazing. Yeah, I'm going to have a story coming
up.
It's
silly, and it's two-door, and it's less money than a Raptor.
Yeah, but I'm going to have a story coming up talking about, you know, if whether or not this is a good, it's a good city vehicle. But yeah, so I dropped that off at the airport last week, and I went and I drove the Hyundai Palisade that I can't talk about until next week. So stay tuned for that. And then took a long weekend with my girlfriends in St. Louis. So I don't currently have a car. That was a long story of why I don't have a car today.
There you go.
Yeah.
That is a long way to get to that
point. A long way to get to that one point. But I have to give a shout out to my peeps in St. Louis. We had a great weekend.
Your peeps?
My peeps.
Yeah, I got into that Ford just now. I'll be driving that this week. And actually, I'm going to have lunch with Steve and Johnny on Thursday so they can see it.
I love that car. Like, the design on the Strop is, or Stroppy, as you say, I don't know. Again, get in touch with us. Let us know if you know how it's pronounced. But I loved the design on that.
Yeah, it's great looking.
Interior and exterior. And I had the opportunity to drive it in the off-road on the Mama Rally. Holy snikey, that was amazing.
Ford has a number of heritage editions of both the Bronco and the Bronco Sport.
Mm-hmm.
And they get a little expensive, especially on the Bronco Sport relative to the rest of the line. But they're cool.
Mm-hmm.
The white grill, mm-hmm. the white grill, the white wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love that look.
Mm-hmm.
Just early 70s crossovers, SUVs were cool.
Mm-hmm.
And rugged as heck. And,
mm-hmm.
And they were cheaper then, too.
Mm.
So, but back to Acura, we talked about this last week. The TL goes away. Or, sorry, TLX.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be, it used to be called the TL,
mm-hmm.
but that's their Accord-sized, mid-sized sedan.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not selling enough of them anymore. So the ADX at the bottom of the lineup will compensate for that volume,
Yeah.
Probably easily, because it's kind of a nice entry-level price, mm-hmm. and it's an Acura. And if it's not different enough from the HR-V, check out the HR-V.
Yeah.
But they're both, the HR-V is actually a really well-reviewed, liked vehicle. I haven't driven one in a long time, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of glad because I don't fit in it. There are so few vehicles I actually don't fit in, but that's one of them. The BMW 3 Series, the four-door, that's rough for me. Obviously, the Miata. But yeah, and this thing.
Well, you know, so I feel like at some point we need to do an episode, and maybe we do this when we have Damon come back on. Mm-hmm. We need to do the extreme driver review. So, you know, Damon's like 6'8", 6'9". You know, you're on the bigger side of the spectrum. I'm on the smaller side of the
spectrum. Well, 6'1", over 350.
Yeah. So I feel like it would be interesting
to talk. If people believe I'm a retired linebacker, I feel way better about this.
You are, though. But I feel like that would be an interesting thing to talk about, like the extremes of what vehicles fit us.
Yeah. Although cars have gotten larger. You and I were at the Romeo Proving Grounds almost 20 years ago, and we got into the Ford GT.
Yeah.
And I was in line behind you or in front of you.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things was I was afraid I wasn't going to fit in this car. Mm-hmm. And this was their sports car, mm-hmm. their halo car at the time. And the interesting thing about it was, first of all, it's got the roof cut out, mm-hmm. where the doors actually open into the roof to make it easier to get in and out of. Mm-hmm. But I got in, I fit just fine, even with the confining belt. And I was talking to the engineer while we were driving, and he's like, yeah, Americans have gotten 22% larger. Since they built the GT40, the original supercar.
Right.
So they built this car to accommodate the bigger American. The other interesting thing, too, was...
It did not accommodate me, by the way.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing about this car, and we're out of time, was we were allowed to drive 130 miles an hour on this big banked oval.
Oh, it was only 130?
There was no... As cool as that sounds, there is no sensation of speed whatsoever.
No.
You're just on a big banked oval. You could have been going 200. It didn't matter.
I feel like I was closer to 200 than 130.
No, I blipped 140 by accident.
And I blipped high by accident.
And that's about as fast as I've ever driven.
And they were like, could you slow down, please? And I was like, yeah. But I had to sit on my coat, and we had to
jerry-rig the seat. And a couple
of phone books. Yeah, probably.
You bring a phone book with you for these things.
Yeah, but we had to jerry-rig the seat for me to be able to like drive that.
All right, we are out of time.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was we had a good show today.
We did. Big thanks to Bill Stokes of Subaru. We mm-hmm. appreciate it. Thank you, Jill Simonillo.
Yep.
Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.